You're listening to Gameplay on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Good afternoon and welcome, everybody. This is the third and final hour of Gameplay. A ridiculous NFL weekend. The Raptors going 2-0 against, you know, teams they're supposed to beat. They beat both of them. Covered against Utah, not against the Pelicans. Also, their next game against the Phoenix Suns. NFL coaches are getting fired. Jokovic is free to roam around Australia, which is going to anger everyone except for the lovely nation of Croatia, which is absolutely gorgeous. But we go back to the NHL. Always loving Andy McNeil, who is an NHL gambling analyst with VSiN, gets to join us. Andy, good afternoon, and thanks for taking time to join the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk a little hockey. It's been a weird couple of weeks getting out of this break here and starting to get back into the swing of things.
Okay, so let's start there with the swing of things. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, if this was just an incorrect, best way to put it. In the first couple of days, it seemed like the favorites were getting it done and overs were hitting all over the place. Was that the case for the first week, and where are we now?
I think you'll see things settle down again here. The long layoff seemed to have a real negative impact on goaltenders specifically, a lot of goaltenders anyway, and I think things will settle down. But, you know, in general, anytime you look at a small sample size, and obviously there's always some sort of narrative that can kind of be applied to things, and maybe there is some substance to it. But I think if you look at the small sample size on even a month-to-month basis, you see a lot of fluctuation throughout the season in things like scoring rates and goaltender save percentage and things of that nature. And in terms of the favorites winning, you know, I think a lot of these bigger favorites are getting the job done when they're, you know, laying big prices here, like the Avalanche tonight, for instance, up in that -360 range. You haven't seen a lot of big upsets this year when it comes to some of these really down and out teams. So I think that makes up most of that trend that we're seeing now with the favorites winning more than you'd expect them to overall.
And this could be a generalization, but for people that are dipping their toe into it, who are the teams right now which just like, all right, bet on them five games in a row. You're gonna get your money. You know, over the course of time, you're gonna get your money. Like, it feels like Colorado is just one of those teams. If you want to put down a long term investment and bet on them the next 10 games, you're almost guaranteed to make money.
So here, I'll kind of share an example of what I went through the other day. I wanted to get a big bet down on the Avalanche against the Maple Leafs because it looked like they were going to open around -130 and -135 at some shops. But that immediately got that up all the way to -160, -165, and that's where it closed heading into to the last game. And so I ended up passing on the Avalanche for the most part. I had a small bet, but didn't have as much as I would have had at -135. But I definitely looked to get involved in early in the game when they were trailing 3-0, and was very happy to have an almost 4-1 payout on that live line. So while there is, you know, I'd say some value obviously on the Avalanche on a game to game basis, you've got to be careful not to pay too much. I mean, really, I almost say I had to chase that line a little bit and laid $1.60 to win $1. I probably would have felt pretty, you know, a lot of regret throughout that game with them trailing. So I guess just a little bit of lesson from some experience.
So then, okay, let's go down this road again, because I heard of a couple people who did the same thing. They might have put a bet on Colorado, and then they bet more on them when they were down 3-0, 4-1, just because there's a lot of talent there. What do you think about that strategy? And I'll make it a little more specific. You find who are the elite teams. You keep an eye on them. And if they are down 2-0, 3-1 in the second period, you know, let's say like Colorado against Seattle, your odds are going to get better to bet on those good teams. Where maybe the smart play is watch those games with the elite teams. If they get down by a couple goals, then hammer the live lines.
Yeah, well, I think that strategy applies in the playoffs more widespread, I think, because obviously you've got right. incentive to play to the final whistle. So I'd be very careful in the regular season doing that on a regular basis, but there are definitely teams, Colorado being one of them. And the Toronto is a team that I'm, you know, very comfortable taking down a couple of goals as well, even though they're, you know, known for blowing these leads. They have the ability to come back and win games from behind as well. So, you know, the Maple Leafs, the Golden Knights when they're healthy, the Avalanche, the Bruins used to be a team that I used to love, getting down on because they always seemed to find a way with Marchand and Bergeron and Pasternak, whether it was, you know, pulling the goalie, down a couple of goals or whatever. But, you know, the Avalanche are the big one for sure in that respect, but, sportsbooks and the people that set the odds, they're pretty smart, and they're not going to give you too generous of a price in those situations.
Right. So then let's go on the other side. And the question originally was going to ask is there a team out there right now that you are that maybe you're shorting that other people aren't? But what about the other side, the live game betting? What about the idea? What's that? Okay.
Well, I feel like, I mean, you know, I'm a numbers guy when it comes to betting and whatnot, but at certain points, there are teams that just stand out like a sore thumb, and you know they aren't as good as maybe their underlying metrics suggest they are. When you know time and time again they let you down, and the Detroit Red Wings are that team for me. And I'm a little bit worrisome when it comes to betting against them and fading them every day. But I do see a lot of bettors that I think are sharp. They're betting on the Red Wings, and it seems like night in, night out that they're doing it. And I just don't agree with it. I think this is a bad hockey team. They're close. They'll be on the up and up in the next couple of years with players like Seider and Lucas Raymond. But right now they are just a terrible hockey team, and they're a team that I'm looking to fade whenever I can.
Are there teams like that that, let's do the opposite of my earlier question, and again, joined by Andy McNeil, NHL gambling analyst with VSiN, which is all 24-hour all-betting network, where you see that team jump out to a lead, and then you just bet against them because you know they're not good enough to keep that rolling?
Yeah, there are definitely some teams out there, and the Red Wings would be one of them. And it all depends on the situation, and a lot of the time it depends on the opponent. And I think to your question earlier about what teams am I looking to jump on when they go down, it also has to do a lot with who they're playing. And if a team like the Avalanche is up against a team like the Devils that jumps out to an early lead, or the Blue Jackets that has been scoring goals, we saw them blow a 4-0 lead to the Hurricanes about a week ago. There are definitely teams out there like that I'll look to bet live or bet against live if they're leading. But for the most part, I'm sticking to the pregame markets on a day-to-day basis.
So, Andy, one of the main reasons that I wanted to get you on today is, again, to sort of look at more big picture betting when it comes to the NHL. And I'm just curious your thoughts about what with the schedules changing, and a lot of times when you bet, you look for those advantages. It's their third game in four nights kind of thing. Well, now schedules are all over the place, and they're going to continue to change. But we're going to see a lot more compression, a lot of games and not a lot of time. I'm wondering how that's changed your outlook for this year.
I'm just going to approach it as I come from a futures perspective or things like that. It might change some things, but as far as on a day-to-day basis, I'm just going to kind of look at each game on a micro level and try to absorb as much information as I can heading into each day. And As far as the condensed scheduling, I think, you know, for bettors, it's important to look at how coaches are handling their goalie usage. And, you know, in a situation where there are, you know, three games in 4 nights, you might not necessarily want to be betting against the team when they're tired. There might be a better opportunity at the front end of that set. Maybe they're playing a weaker opponent where they start their backup or something, you know, earlier in that compressed stretch of games, right? So I try to think outside the box a little bit, but for sure, if a team has two strong goaltenders, it's going to help them a lot. And when all teams are playing, you know, really compressed schedules like the Canadian teams will be in the next couple of months here, you would think. So it might kind of even out on both sides in a lot of instances, and it will come down to, you know, which coaches are using their goaltenders more wisely.
Man, all eyes going to be on Peter Mrazek when it comes to the Maple Leafs. So I was scanning up and down. I don't know if you have a play or a thought, and if you don't, go, nope, don't have anything on here. But it's the Bruins at Washington, Boston, plus 100, Washington minus 20. Over-under is at 5.5. Capitals 4-1 in their last five, but just 2-3 in their last five against the spread. I mean, I can go over and over all these numbers. I just wondered if you had any thoughts on the Bruins-Caps game tonight.
I kind of had a little bit of interest in it, but the line, you know, sort of got away, and I was a little bit hesitant to get involved because of TJ Oshie, Nicholas Backstrom, and Charlie McAvoy, who I do think is going to play tonight. But it looks like Oshie and Backstrom are back in. I think the line is about where it should be at a pick'em pretty much right now, and I don't think there's, you know, value in taking the Bruins at plus 100, and minus 110 is right about where the Capitals should be. I think that the Washington's a stronger team than people give them credit for, and I don't know if it matters all that much whether it was Ilya Samsonov or Zach Fucale in goal. I'm definitely interested in seeing how Colorado and Seattle plays out tonight, but I'm looking at the Avalanche and the Predators tomorrow as a game that I'm really intrigued by, and I'm not necessarily ready to bet anything now, but Gabriel Landeskog is out for the Avalanche, and it looks like they'll start Darcy Kuemper on Tuesday, sorry, against the Preds, because Pavel Francouz will go tonight against the Kraken. But it's too bad that Josi and Landeskog are going to be out, because this Nashville team's been sort of playing over their heads a little bit, and I was excited to see how they do at full strength against this Avalanche team, but it's going to be an interesting matchup nonetheless. And if anybody can shut the offense of the Avalanche down, it's you, Staros.
So what you're saying is that if you're looking to place a bet and you don't want to do it on Monday, hey, throw some money on Alabama, don't worry about hockey, and then tomorrow night maybe take the Preds.
Yeah, pretty much. I'd give it some consideration.
By the way, before I let you go, I forgot that you're in the Edmonton area. What advice would you give to the Edmonton Oiler fan base that is looking to place some money on a Edmonton game?
Well, you know, they've never really listened to me anyway, so I don't know if I can really. But no, it's tough here. Obviously, the Oilers are getting bailed out with their, you know, schedule being the way it is.
Postponed all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been really bad if they had to have played a full 2 weeks worth of games without Connor McDavid and the rest of the boys that are on the COVID list. But, you know, this is they're a decent hockey team. They're definitely underperforming, but it's hard to see them coming out of this slump without a change in goal, for sure. And as far as the prices go on a game-to-game basis, I think the Oilers are a little bit overvalued or right around that kind of range. And they're, you know, the market's going to have to soften on that team a little bit before I'll be betting on them on a regular basis, because you do get really bad goaltending on a game-to-game basis with that team.
Yep, feels like bet the over and stay away from everything else. Hey, Andy, really appreciate taking time. Where can people find your work, sir?
At VSiN.com. I do a daily NHL betting market report where I you know, share my thoughts on every game on the NHL schedule and any picks and that I do have that day, including some player props. Plus, today it's looking like a light day with not a whole lot going on in the NHL and some pretty tough prices out there.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was. It's a tough day today, so maybe just, you know, you don't need to bet every day. Just wait until you see the number that you like. Thanks so much for joining us.
Take care.
Absolutely. Andy McNeil from VSiN NHL Betting Analyst. All right, on the other side, Dan Orlovsky from ESPN. His thoughts on the Dolphins firing Brian Flores. Woof. Miami, you're making a mistake. That is coming up in a moment, but first, traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Kaz. Producer Austin, have you noticed there doesn't seem to be as much rage as I expected with Novak Djokovic being released from 4 days in the quarantine hotel in Melbourne? I was expecting more from that.
Yeah, it almost makes me feel like we had a slow news week last week or something, and coming off a busy Sunday, no one really seems to care what's going on down under.
Maybe it's because, A, there's so much other stuff going on. B, COVID fatigue. 3, we already yelled and screamed, and it's the Aussie Open, and when news and stuff happens, most of us are sleeping.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. I'm right there with you, though. I thought there would be a much bigger outrage to him being allowed to play, the courts overruling it. But no, it looks like Novak will be able to defend his Australian Open title. Let's try to get, I think we should get Mark Rowe on to talk about that a little later in the week, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And
we fade Novak, or Novax, as he's been going around now as. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Boo. Well, no, you'll be here all week. Tuesday. I like, yo, you booed yourself.
No, this is the studio audience, man. I have no control over them
whatsoever. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, you know, restaurants, gyms are closed, but studio audience is still very, very critical. by the way, I am just every now, all I'm doing is I am looking to see if there can be a change and that the Giants will fire Joe Judge. I mean, you're bringing in, and you're going to bring in a new GM, and I'm just like, could just please, like, their offense in every important statistical category for the 2 years that Joe has been there has been dead last. And I know it's not all his fault. I know a lot of it is not on him. It's on Gettleman, who gets to retire. That's BS. I needed him to be fired. I needed some humiliation. I needed some sort of just like pound of flesh. We're not going
to
get it.
Yeah, this was what we wanted to do here, but let's do it. The Maras are one of the most stable owners, I think, in the NFL, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
They have already said that Joe Judge and Daniel Jones will be returning, I think, from week 16, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not changing their mind, Matt. I think you got to get rid of that hope, dash that hope. They seem to believe in the project that both of them are doing, even if it is doing QB sneaks on 3rd and 9 from your own 6.
The thing is, it's not just that. It is the press conferences.
It's the press conferences are horrible.
And the thing is, like, here's the thing. I don't care what someone has to say a lot of times. And we're bad at this in the media. It's a bad habit we have, but we nitpick every word. But he sounds so defensive and insecure.
Insecure, yep.
And he can't handle the media. And he's just, every time he says something crazy, I have to wonder, what do the players think of their leader who sounds like a raving moron? And if you're a free agent, how do you feel about that? If you're an agent, oh, are you going to direct your players that way? Now, maybe none of it means anything, because if you're an agent, you're like, man, they signed Kenny Golladay to how much money?
72
oh,
million.
Oh, my God. How many touchdowns did he have? Oh, zero?
Zero.
Zero. Zero touch. Oh, God, get him and bleep you. Bleep you. All right, let's hear from Dan Orlovsky, former Lions quarterback, now with ESPN, his thoughts about the Miami Dolphins firing Brian Flores.
Yeah, I think it's a mistake.
Yes, I agree.
Here's my struggle with it, because the NFL is a results-driven league. We all know this. Oftentimes, coaches who are good men get fired, and we go, you just didn't get it done.
Yeah.
He's got back-to-back winning seasons.
Yeah.
He's beaten New England twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
10-6 and 9-8 the last 2 years. And for me, it feels eerily similar to what happened to Jim Caldwell in Detroit.
Yeah.
We're like, it was good, but the expectations were to be better. Mm-hmm. And you fire a coach that is a really good coach, and you're going to regret it.
If I was the Giants, I'd go and hire him right now. I go grab Brian Flores. I think he's a good coach. You know, and I don't put as much stock in the win again, this last win against New England, just because I think New England at some point realized, oh, wait a minute, Buffalo is pulling away from the Jets. But I think, you know what? I'm not feeling as confident about New England. Like, it feels to me, and we'll be talking about this throughout the week, but are the Patriots a team? Can they be -1 in the turnover ratio and win a game?
No, absolutely not. They need to win the turnover battle every week.
Yeah. They had 8 penalties for 78 yards. By the way, that was a big part of why the Chargers lost that game in overtime against the Raiders. Lots and lots of penalties. Brandon Staley, I'm sorry. The shine is really coming off you there, buddy. But, you know, Tua Tagovailoa, 15 of 22 for 109 yards and a touchdown. You know, this is a game where Miami wins the turnover. Patriots had 3 turnovers, 2 by Mac Jones, 8 penalties. Can, like, the really good teams win a playoff game when things aren't all going their way? Can New England do that?
No, I'm right there with you with the Patriots. I think we might have a case of a team peaking too early, even. I just think that we've seen the best, and it's already happened. Maybe next year, but I don't think Mac Jones this year. I don't like them against Buffalo this week.
Nope, neither do I. All right, on the other side, speaking of quarterbacks, Sean King, quarterback a long time in the NFL, and now does a lot of NFL work with VEASAN, will be joining the show next and get his thoughts on that ridiculous game. And if he was on either of those sidelines, would he have been okay if the team decided, we're going to go for a tie? That's coming up in a moment right here on Gameplay. But first, time now for Newstalk 1010 Traffic Update. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Kaws. And it was a hell of a way to end the NFL season with the 49ers somehow scoring a touchdown with 87 seconds left to force overtime and win in overtime against the Rams. And that result meant we didn't have to deal with the New Orleans Saints and that horrible offense. Oh, we can all rejoice. But then you also had the Chargers. There was a chance where it looked like there could have been a tie, and it would have been the Chargers and the Raiders in the playoffs. But no, the Raiders win on a last-second field goal in one of the wildest games all year, which means we have the Steelers, and we've got that offense. Joining me now to talk about offenses, quarterbacks, nutty coaches, it is Sean King, former quarterback of the Buccaneers, and now host of the Nightcap on VSiN. It is Sean King. Sean, thanks for joining the show today.
If there's ever been anything invented that has brought me more entertainment and joy than the game of football, I mean, what a weekend. I mean, fascinating to watch from start to finish. So happy that adding the extra game worked.
Oh, yeah. We were complaining before about the extra week, and I get why we did that. You know, I totally understand why we did that, just because, you know, you're worried about players getting hurt. But, oh, my God, it worked out pretty well, didn't it?
It did, from start to finish, from Carson Wentz turning into the pumpkin of January.
Oh, yeah.
Some kind of way the Colts lost to the Jags. When it started off like that, you knew we were in for a day to never forget.
It's ridiculous. So let's get to the big game. Your thoughts on Brandon Staley, and first, going for it at your own 18-yard line in the third quarter, and then, of course, calling the timeout in overtime. It looked like the Raiders were just running the ball up the middle and not calling any timeouts himself. I'm curious your thoughts on those two calls by Chargers head coach Brandon Staley.
Well, as you know, I'm not a guy that believes in this analytical wave of new coaches. And here's why. I think everything that you're very good at in life, you always have to continue to evolve. So I'm not a person that says analytics or the actual information that the accumulation of numbers provides is something to dismiss. But the difference is the analytics crew feels like they got to live and die by it all the time. And I just, I feel bad for his players because he puts his players in such a predicament on a consistent basis, and it's unnecessary. And then, like, I lost total respect for him because if you're going to say you only live once and yell YOLO, then go for two, damn it. Don't kick the extra point and go to overtime. Go for two. Don't tuck your tail now. After you went for it on fourth down on your own 18 in the third quarter, come on, man. Like, that's what – don't pick and choose.
And, you know, I mean, look at Justin Herbert. I mean, he was bad on first, second, and third down. The man was 6 for 6 throwing the ball on fourth down. And this goes to the bigger question. How the hell – where, Sean, we have all these teams that are like, oh, we're a quarterback away. Brian Flores doesn't get fired by the Miami Dolphins if Tua Tagovailoa played like an above-average quarterback. Meanwhile, Brandon Staley had Justin Herbert for every game. All the receivers and running backs are there for like 16 of the 17 games, and yet they miss the playoffs. How do you miss the playoffs when you get a full year, productive year to Justin Herbert?
Yeah, I don't know how Flores got fired. I'm presuming that because of the owner's ties to the University of Michigan, this is a play on getting Jim Harbaugh would be my guess. That's the only thing that would make sense. And ultimately, I heard that there was disagreement between Flores and the GM at the quarterback position. But I just asked, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't Tua get drafted before Herbert, or am I?
Yes. No, Tua got drafted before Herbert.
Right. So, I mean, come on, guys. Like, I don't understand the NFL sometimes. I love it. It makes me pull the hair that I don't have out of my head more than it doesn't. Like, I tweeted the NFL last night, how could a game possibly end in a tie in the highest level of football possible in this world? Like, how could a game end in a tie? It's so many things that frustrate me, but specifically to that, I don't think Brian Flores will be unemployed long. When you look at the Dolphins starting 1-7 and then finishing winning 7 out of their last 8, if I'm not mistaken, like, how do you fire that guy but Joe Judge still has a job?
I got no idea. I have no idea. I have none whatsoever. I am, in fact, right now, are you with me on this? I mean, the Giants have been last in every offensive category for the last 2 years, and I know it's not all on Judge. It's on horrible drafting by that fool David Gettleman, who's now been let go. If I'm the Giants, I hire Brian Flores today. I'm a Joe Judge. Get you and your nutty press conferences. Get it. Actually, here's my question for you. As a player, How much would you guys ever pay attention to a coach's post-game press conference? Because for 2 weeks in a row now, Joe Judge sounds like a raving loon. Like, do players ever put any stock in that, or do they ignore that?
Well, first of all, Gettleman didn't get fired. He retired.
Sure. That's it. Yeah. We didn't break up. Me and my girlfriend, no, we didn't. She didn't dump me. Oh, no, it was a mutual breakup. It was mutual.
Absolutely. To answer your question directly, Joe Judge has been getting the side eye since the day that he stepped in the building because they hired a guy that had never even been a coordinator. Like, don't forget this. He was a special teams coach, and don't tell me that's a coordinator. I'm talking about offense or defense. So you have a whole side of the team. So from day one, the veteran players are already looking at Joe Judge sideways like, oh, he must know somebody that knows the owner. Like, because this definitely didn't happen because of merit. So once you add on the weirdness, let's use for an adjective in this situation, of his press conferences, of course the guys are like, well, I'm going to just be about me because obviously the organization don't care about winning. So all I'm going to try and do is make sure I hit all my individual incentives and stay healthy. And that's the attitude you start to get when the players don't believe in the head guy. When the players don't believe in management, when they don't believe in ownership, that's what happens. Because guys are always going to do what's best for them, but they lose complete sight of any team-oriented goals. And justifiably so.
Yes. If I'm a player on the Giants or if I'm a free agent, You know, I'm like, I don't know if I want to. I don't know if I want to go there. It just it seems so dysfunctional. By the way,
you know the conversations that happen. Hey, listen, I got this trip booked for the Maldives in 2 weeks. I'm not getting hurt, so I can't go.
Yeah, I'm not getting surgery now. I'm gonna wait. I'm gonna pull a Shaq. I'm gonna get the surgery during training camp. It's just ridiculous. Joined by Sean King from VSiN, host of The Nightcap. Again, go to VSIN.com to check out the work he does. Again, the name of the show is The Nightcap. What do you think it was like on that Charger sideline where that's probably the first time you're hoping for a tie? And then the other side to this is, Sean, as fans, we got screwed. You know, I wanted to see Herbert in the playoffs. Now I got to have Ben Roethlisberger and 3 yard passes for a game.
And by the way, shout out to Justin Herbert. I mean, what an impressive performance by a guy that hasn't started two full seasons yet. Uh-huh. I mean, that was a display of old school quarterback play, because he actually had to be extremely tough physically, and you don't see that a lot now because of the rules and the way they protect the quarterback. Like, he took some shots. He was under duress. I mean, he was harassed. I mean, everything that the Raiders could do. I mean, that front played probably their best game of the year for the Raiders, and Herbert just kept getting up and kept making throws. And I already knew he was talented, but my respect for him now is on the same level as I have for the Aaron Rodgers, the Russell Wilsons, those guys that have done it for years now. So hats off to him. And who knows, maybe the football gods are going to smile kindly on Big Ben as he takes his swan song in the playoffs. So we'll see. I shout out to Mike Tomlin. I'd be remiss.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just don't think he gets enough credit, man. 15 years, never a losing record. Just think about that for a second. Let that soak in. 15 years in the professional league with the most parity. Like, no matter what you say, the NFL has the most parity of any professional sports league. He's never had a losing record. That is unbelievable.
It is. It's crazy. I'm happy for him that Pittsburgh's in the playoffs. I'm not happy for my eyeballs that I have to watch that offense in the playoffs. But shout out, obviously, to Mike Tomlin. Actually, the one other team, and they're not going to get as much attention. The New Orleans Saints finished with the same record as the Los Angeles Chargers. They started 4 quarterbacks. Michael Thomas did not have him for the year. Alvin Kamara missed a bunch of games. Shout out to that defense, and somehow that team finding a way to win 9 games.
You know, Staley, I don't know what he has on his owner, but I mean, it must be pretty significant, because think about this. If he just kicks the field goal in the Chiefs game in L.A., they win. Yeah. If he does not go for it on 4th down on his 18 and punt, you got a 50-50 chance that the Raiders don't get those 3 points. Last time I checked, the game ended in a tie in regulation. So you can directly correlate the Chargers not being in the playoffs to his decision-making, his lack of game management. And I hope it's a omen for all these other young guys who, in my opinion, have ascended way too fast to some of these positions. The NFL is now about, you know, spreadsheets and PowerPoints. It's not about people. And at the end of the day, the organizations that win championships are the ones that manage people the best, not the ones that have the best presentations. And I think the NFL and its ownership has to collectively get back to hiring someone that can manage people, not someone that you would hire in your Fortune 500 company to run your actual business. Football is about people.
Could not agree more, Sean. I need someone. As a Giants fan, I need someone who can. Anyway, I'm not going to go back and yell at Joe Judge. Last question for you again, because I always love asking quarterback questions for you. The 49ers, beat the Rams 27-24 in overtime. And in that game, we saw Jimmy G the good, the drive with 87 seconds left. They went, 82 yards and looked great. But then we got Jimmy G the bad, a lot of throws behind targets. The interception, it was a hell of a play by Jalen Ramsey. Your thoughts on the 49ers, a team that's got a lot of talent, but it's got a quarterback that drive to drive, I don't know when I can trust him.
You know, I just can't with Jimmy G. You know, I just don't know what to do with him. You know, he dresses nice. The ladies say his cheekbone structure is something that they like.
He's gorgeous. He's a good-looking man. You know, he can't
find a wife. Like, if I'm a fan, that's how I feel about him. Like, at halftime, like, I'm yelling at Coach Shanahan because he won't bitch him. And after the game, you know, I want him in the Pro Bowl. Like, I don't know what to do with Jimmy G. I do think that they backed themselves into a corner because of the resources they gave up in last year's draft to move up and select Trey Lance. So I think right, wrong, or indifferent, this is Trey Lance's team next year. But Jimmy G is an enigma. Like, on the free agent market, I mean, who is he an upgrade over? I'm not sure. You know, that'll be a fascinating one to watch. You know, because there are some guys that kind of fit that mold. Derek Carr for the Raiders last night played a very uneven game, seemed skittish in the pocket, missed some wide open throws, yet on the big third down on the field goal winning drive, he stands in the pocket and throws a comeback route on the button that picks up a first down. So I think there are a lot of guys kind of, we could do worse, but we can't really win anything of significance with. So we'll see how this quarterback carousel plays out. I think it all starts and ends with Deshaun Watson's off-the-field issues. If those get resolved, he's by far the number one target.
Oh, 100%. And, once everything gets there, that's going to be a football conversation, a morality one, and everything in between. Really appreciate Sean. Always love bringing the fire. A hell of a way to end the season. Can't wait for the playoffs to start next week. And as always, Sean, really appreciate. Check out his work at VSiN. What do you got?
Before I leave, you know, I like your listeners to make some money. The Tennessee Titans are plus 450 to win the AFC. They're going to get Derrick Henry. Yes, they're going to get Derrick Henry back. They only have to win two games to bring home the money. Let's go get paid, people.
Love it. Taking Tennessee at plus 450. Follow him on Twitter at RealSeanKing. Check out his work, The Nightcap. Go to VSIN.com. That's VSIN.com. Sean, all the best, my friend.
Thank you.
Take care. Former NFL quarterback, member of the Super Bowl team with Tampa Bay back in the day, Sean King. All right, we got to take a break. On the other side, we got Sound of the Day. That is coming up next. You are listening to Gameplay right here on TSN 1050. Time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. Not a lot of time in this final segment, so let's get right to it. Let's get to Sound of the Day.
Sound of the Day! Sound of the Day!
And first, the most important moment in basketball yesterday. No, not the 34-foot three-pointer by Fred VanVleet tying the Raptors-Pelicans game, a game the Raptors ultimately won. Fred would hit a three right after that. By the way, Fred has been named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. I'm talking about the return of, it's been like two-plus years now, the return of Klay Thompson. Here's one of his dunks from the Warriors' win over the Cavs.
Klay's got Jared Allen on a switch. He went to reach, and Klay down the lane! Look, it's super bouncy. Crossover gets him by Jared Allen. Dunked on the whole city of Cleveland just now to put Lamar Stevens and Lauri Markkanen in the basket. Mean mugging too. Oh, he's all the way back.
Great to see. We could have played just sound of him hitting a floater or a jumper, but him hitting a dunk is obviously a better sign for his health. Producer Austin, what we got? We got like a minute left in the show?
Yeah, we got a minute here, Matt. We all know that you're on the under tonight in the national championship game, but
Let's under get your, and Alabama.
Alabama with the points or just Alabama straight up? They are 3-point dogs right now, shockingly.
I'm going to take Alabama. I would take both the money line and absolutely the points. I'm going to be safe. I'm going to take Alabama -3, and I want the under. I think it's 52.5. So those are my bets for tonight. What do you got?
I love it. I'm all over Georgia. Georgia was the better team all year. They learned their lesson from the SEC championship game. I'm also with you on the under because if Georgia wins this game, it's going to be low scoring. If we are talking about Bryce Young tomorrow, everyone will know why.
All right. Well, we will find out tomorrow. One of us will be right. One of us will be wrong. Hey, listen, as long as that game, if the game tonight can be like half as good as the Sunday nighter.
Oh, yeah, half, yeah.
We are in store for a fantastic evening. That is it for us. Tomorrow, we get you set for Raptors, Suns, Leafs in Vegas, and the NFL playoffs, national championship. It's going to be a packed show. Overdrive is coming up next. Time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.